extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partner in soccer, Matt Doyle, Match Day 11 in the books. We'll go through it all. The best thing we saw, Brian White's welcoming committee sees a backheel goal. That was pretty cool. Well, Lionel Messi is the man of the match day yet again here on Extra Time. But hey, two goals and assist, an insane goal contributions per minute rate right now. It's Messi's world. We're all living in it. And New England are just trying to dig their way out. Plus, more from around the league. Austin, 4 wins in 5. Red Bulls in Vancouver, a tactically entertaining 1-1 draw. Salt Lake goes to Philly and knocks off the Union. And Peter Vermees brings his iPad to a post-game presser after yet another loss. Much, much more, including our top 5 defensive midfielders in MLS history in honor of Diego Chara and a rousing That's Whack segment. Doyle, what's up, man?
I like the fact that you tagged Vancouver twice in the intro already.
Did I?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's a new world.
Right?
We can't stop talking about the Whitecaps.
We cannot stop talking about the Whitecaps. We said a couple weeks ago, after they had that 4-1-1 start, and we said, okay, we like this team, but they've played an easy schedule. Let's see what happens as they move further into this season. And the returns have been mostly good. And Brian White, his return to New Jersey was excellent. That was the best thing I saw.
Are you willing? I was going to say, are you willing to use your best thing you saw on New Jersey raised Brian White?
So the goal itself, you did a nice job of breaking it down on the wrap up, by the way.
Oh, I appreciate that. Just flowers. Give them to me. Get going.
You keep earning. Well, all right. Do it again. Take us through the buildup to that goal, which was the best thing I saw.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think Vancouver likes to attack into space and they sit deep and they'll do it when they win the ball. But it's also really interesting how choreographed so much of it is to break lines and get face forward. Vancouver have the ball against sort of what is a mid-block Red Bulls team, and they play into that left wing back or winger, depending on positioning. And it's just it's a choreographed routine there to find Brian Gallagher in behind, in between the lines. All about the overload. On the other side, Raposo's just hanging out in the weak space. You rotate it, you get it to him. Brian White does what Brian White does, which is that he makes everything super predictable for anybody who provides service in a positive way. You know he's going to time it right. You know the run is going to be at the right angle into the right space. And then we don't give him enough credit for just being an instinctive finisher.
Yeah.
Like a guy who finds ways to put the ball in the back of the net. And it's like, oh, it's not always the most beautiful. Who cares? It's super effective. He's now the all-time MLS era leading scorer for the Whitecaps. And that is sick. Like that's really cool.
It was sick. This one was a beautiful finish. You know, making that hard near post run and then finishing with his trailing leg, right leg, back heel past Carlos Coronel. If this was a Luis Suarez goal, it would be, 2 million views on social media, and everybody would be like, oh, this guy's a genius. Brian White now has, 5 goals, 2 assists in about 500 minutes this year in MLS play. And remember, a few hundred of those minutes came miscast as a sort of target right winger at the start of the season when they were throwing stuff against the wall and starting Demir Krylock as the number 9. Now that he's back playing centrally as a number 9, the guy's been fantastic. I think he's probably the best non-DP attacker in the league. Let's agree with that?
I heard that take and it was one of those ones where you're like, oh, but I couldn't immediately refute it. Non-DP attacker.
You think on that a little bit. I'm going to go through. Remember, this was 3 years ago now. The Red Bulls traded Brian White to Vancouver for $400,000 worth of GAM.
Sweet, sweet GAM.
I mean,
they were feeling flush, Doyle, like 400K in the pocket. Let's go.
It's one of the all-time heists. He was obviously great last year. He's had ups and downs in the past, I think mostly injury related. He struggled in, 2022 because he, from what I understood, he got kind of sick and struggled getting his wind back. He's got it back now. He's going to have another, you know, barring injury, he's going to have another double-digit goal season. His ability to, as you said, make things predictable and finish off those patterns of play with like really reliable, fundamentally sound movement in and around the box, but also a level of physicality. We talked about it last week with Chicho Arango, who's not a big guy. He somehow manages to dominate center backs physically anyway in these tight moments. Brian White does that too. And he's done that a lot since day one. And now he's doing it week after week after week for 90 minutes. I love these stories. I love guys who are maybe not the highest rated players coming into the league, getting their chance. And it's the Chris Wondolowski stuff, you know? And one of the great things about MLS is like, yeah, we're the league that has Messi now, and we're the league that is developing tons of young players. And, you know, in terms of outbound transfers to Europe, I think the only league in the world that sells more is Brazil. And that is like, from the time that MLS started, I wanted us to be that league, and we're there, and it's awesome. The fact that we still have stories like Brian White or Taniolo Wushei, who is maybe the next Brian White, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later in the show. Like, I never want that to go away. I want us to always have that in our DNA as a league.
You didn't mention our Lord and Savior, Duncan McGuire. We're just chock full of stories as well. Look, I was thinking about the, you know, during your soliloquy there, I was thinking about the TAM players, or not TAM, just non-DP attackers. Robin Lund, he would be one that I would throw
for sure
your way. Dejan Jovalić, I guess, is not technically a
DP
attacker, but I think on balance, you might take Brian White. Certainly Vanni Sartini would. We asked Sartini on MLS Countdown before the match, and he was his usual shining self, describing the pizza places he went to on both sides of the river and just being Vanni Sartini. He said Brian White's the most irreplaceable player on the team. Straight up. And it's interesting to see where the Whitecaps will go with this roster in the summer, but keeping Brian White, keeping him happy, keeping him on the field is pretty clearly a crucial part of this entire project. Now, congratulations to Brian White and Vancouver Whitecaps. You are just bathing in the coverage right now. I would love to see what you're doing now, but 60 friends and family too. What a different welcome from Brian White than Matt Miazga had. What a dichotomy between the two of those guys with their welcome back to Red Bull Arena. Anyway, best thing I saw. Did you see Hani Mukhtar blast Tanner Beeson like into a different dimension?
I did.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah. If you didn't watch the highlights from Nashville, San Jose, don't blame you. But Hani Mukhtar scores a goal. Initially, he takes an almost identical shot from outside the box and just wallops it, just destroys it, laser beams it straight into the torso of Tanner Beeson, who goes down and has some trouble getting back up. Like, the force here was significant. Hani gets the ball right back. It's like, okay, cool, I'll do it again. Scores a goal off that. It's just a ridiculously awesome, only the nerds are going to find that funny sort of play, and I'm right here with my hand raised. Speaking of that, shout out to Christian Benteke, another poster goal, and then adds baby powder to his LeBron Selly routine after a big goal against Seattle in a 2-1 win.
You celebrate tonight when the Lakers get eliminated 4-1.
You know, he's more of a LeBron guy, I assume, than a Lakers guy is Christian Benteke, but I'm sure that's hurting him just a little bit. Happy to get a win. However, hey, before we move on to our man of the match day, hey, Lionel Messi, it is him again. Big week for those of us who want to mainline midweek soccer. Canadian Championship is back. We've got an abandoned match, Doyle, being replayed on Tuesday. Philly taking on Seattle at Subaru Park, plus Pachuca America on that night in a CONCACAF Champions Cup semi, and then on Wednesday, Monterey Columbus. More on that later. All right, man of the match day. It's Messi. Again, walk me through this occasion in New England. A week after Kansas City, Messi and the boys make a stop up in the Northeast, and everybody and their mama comes out.
Yeah, apparently the tickets were about $300 each, which is like Patriots-level ticket prices. It was the largest crowd that Gillette's ever had for an MLS game. And the Revs scored in 37 seconds and then didn't take another shot until the 80th minute, something like that. And
there was only one team on the field, and it was only a matter of time until the dam sort of burst and Miami scored multiple goals. There's not a lot to say about the Revs this year, I don't think.
We'll save just a little something-something for them at the end of this, but Messi, two goals and assists, the way the ball sticks to his foot, the way he just has
that
the ultimate...
That first goal he scored... I struggled to understand.
It was Finiesta that in there. Yeah.
It was.
Robert Taylor.
Thank you. Yeah. Uh-huh. That first touch that Messi has on that goal, like, we've all been watching Messi 20 years. Nothing should surprise us anymore. But that was absurd. It was absolutely absurd, that touch he had.
It's extraterrestrial stuff that's just completely normal. And he is so composed in every one of those moments because he knows his body's going to react in a certain way. And he's already taken two steps ahead and the ball's in the back of the net. And he's sort of smiling a little bit, you know, like, did I just do that? And you're winning 4-1. Sergio Busquets is finding lines and finding passes to Messi that he then converts. But the pass, unbelievable. Did you see afterwards? I think it was Taylor as well, who thought he was making a run, and Messi sort of used that run, I think maybe unbeknownst sort of to Robert Taylor, to sneak in behind. And he's like, oh yeah, I saw how you did that in the end. And it's just like 3-4 steps ahead. And then Ben Kramowski comes back and gets a goal as well. And Messi should have scored that too. Like 36 minutes per goal contribution this year, Doyle.
Yeah.
He's the leader in goals and assists, and he's played like 500-something minutes.
Yeah,
he's probably not even at his best level. The team is not completely healthy in any way. They're atop the supporter shield in points and points per game.
He's a pretty good player. And now
they're a pretty good team, too. I mean, those things go hand in hand, but
yeah,
there's a separation happening, I feel.
It's starting, right? And certainly the attack, getting Taylor back and having him play like that, Kramowski being back. You know, Kramowski had the secondary assist on the Suarez goal, and that was just, like, I didn't necessarily see it with Kramowski last year. Nice player, but I don't know. I felt like I was missing something. And then he comes right into the, you know, finally gets fit and comes right into the team. And just making the little connective tissue type of plays around the box, you know, like, oh, okay, this is what Tata's seeing. This is what Messi's seeing, because Messi apparently loves a kid. So it's all, you see how well it's functioning in attack now. And they have the pieces to rest Luis Suarez, and they have the pieces to take Messi off if he would ever allow himself to be taken off. And they have the pieces to, you know, maybe even get Sergio Busquets on the bench because like Busquets has always been properly rated as one of the greatest defensive midfielders ever to play the game. He's never been appreciated enough as just an innings eater. Like, the dude does not miss time. He's 35, 36 years old now. They need to, at some point, get him off the field, and it feels like they have the pieces to maybe do that. For the real separation to have, and by the way, Miami's 11 games in, they're top the league on both points and points per game, so they are pole position in the shield race. The gap is not huge, but to create the separation that I think you were just alluding to, like, I'm completely confident in their ability to score goals against anyone. What I am not confident in yet is their ability to dictate where on the field the game is played and to use the ball for both rhythm and defensive purposes from the back line, right? And that is the gap that still exists for Miami, and the gap that Monterrey, I think, exploited is that they only have really one very good distributor from center back in Nicolas Freire, right? They don't, like, Aviles has not developed, I think, as quickly as they had hoped. Christophe has been in and out of the lineup. He's not a great distributor of the ball. And then you're talking about, you know, fourth string center back in Ryan Saylor. If they can get those guys performing how they want them to, then I think Miami will start to look like 2018 Atlanta at their very best, or this crew team with the way they build from the back. It'll be more similar to that. And we have only seen that in bits and pieces. And in between those bits and pieces are turnovers and stretch lines between the midfield and back line and a little bit of dislocation. So Miami, I still think they're going to win the Shield. I think they'll probably win the Shield, even if they don't improve substantially in the areas that I'm talking about right here. But for them to become the team that their attacking collective talent suggests they can be, it's this back line. It's their ability to use the ball to make the game the way they want it. And if that doesn't happen, then what we're going to see is that old pattern of play with Busquets dropping deep and splitting.
Can I say this, though? Isn't it true that really, from a personnel standpoint, they haven't been together hardly at all on that back line?
For sure.
Injuries, changes, new signings, obviously at right back, but I mean, they've cycled through guys. Is it just possible that like relationships build, time spent increases, and through predictability and those relationships, some of these things come out and you have the ultimate security blanket in Lionel Messi and Luis Suarez and others? I mean, this entire team is gutted by injury. They're missing attacking players too. Like, but that just kind of solves itself.
I think that it is likely that they improve. What is up for debate is the degree to which they improve.
Fair.
Right? And you think about what the crew did down the stretch last year, you know, like the way they operated on the field and controlled basically every game they were in, and it was from the back line, or the way that, you know, Tata's Atlanta team did it because they had Michael Parkers. Michael Parkers was just so brilliant at this. That is, if the back line hits that level, then we'll get to midseason and we'll all be saying, Miami might not lose another game this year because they have Lionel Messi and he is just so much better than any other human being who's ever played the game of soccer.
And Doyle, they might go sign a center back that can do all the things that you want and just solve the problem in the transfer window as well, because they've had zero shame, zero, you know, there's been no excuse making about resources. They've found a way.
Yep.
To just keep building. And when I watch Miami right now, we're like going through the degrees of possible improvement that this almost certain, probably jinxing them here, like legendary MLS team, they have to do it, but they have all the potential to be it. You know, they're going to go figure it out. Like, we're seeing MLS through a different window with this team. And I was thinking about other teams that have shown us that window of like, hey, here's what it could be at a different level of ambition and spend and just urgency to win and win right now. I mean, maybe that early DC team under the current constraints, you would Echeverry sort of in an age profile and a talent level that was absurd. And then all the national teamers they built around them. But, you know, probably it's more like the LA Galaxy teams in the early 2010s with Beckham and Keane and Donovan. And hey, we got to give us Tam now so we can sign Omar Gonzalez. And maybe the Toronto teams with Jovinko and Josie and Bradley. And oh, now we have Victor Vasquez and this cadre of veterans that can also support them. Maybe it's LAFC going and getting guys like Gareth Bale in a summer transfer window and just loading up to go win an MLS Cup. But this team, more so than any other, is just, it's like a window that I want to see into the future, you know, where I want many teams. There's not many Messis, but there are many players who can, you know, raise the profile of clubs and raise the level. I just hope this is a window. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, it feels like they are pushing the league forward in a way that the Galaxy did a decade ago and Toronto did a couple years after that. And I understand why non-Miami fans around the league are frustrated. And it's because their own teams mostly aren't doing that. And they should be.
All right, let's keep it moving. Revs, whoo, add mass stomach sickness to a list of honestly credible excuses for the Revs and Caleb Porter. Let's see, you have CONCACAF malaise, injuries, bad goalkeeping. You could even go back to 2023 and just say, hey, like drama destroyed a winning culture through that time period. Maybe it's players who don't fit the game model for Caleb this year. Or how about DPs not scoring? Doyle, like there are excuses there to be taken, but we're entering the land where excuses run out, and not because they're not credible, but just because you're a bad team. And then when you're bad, nobody really cares about excuses anymore. This is a critical moment right now for the Revs to decide what they're going to be and how this season's going to be remembered, because they're in such a hole that it's like now. The urgency is now.
I mean, the urgency should have been a month ago. They just look broken. I think you kind of hit the nail on the head, the drama that destroyed the winning culture. At the same time, massive downgrade in goal. Not that Ravas was at fault for this weekend at all. But this is a team that kind of lost their spirit in the middle of last summer when all the stuff with Bruce Arena happened, and they haven't gotten it back. And Caleb Porter was brought in because this was a veteran team that was on a 65-point pace last year. They were second in the Eastern Conference when all that happened, and they had, I think, visions in their head in their of coming back this year, being better, and maybe winning MLS Cup, which is, the Revs have never won MLS Cup. It is the one thing that they want most of all in that club. And Caleb Porter has won it twice with two other teams. And the idea was, okay, he has shown an ability to take veteran teams and push them over the top. And it has not worked at all. If you watch them, they want to build from the back, but the rotations between the back line and the central midfield are slow and kind of directionless. And so what happens is that Carlos Gil drops deep. He drops out of that pocket that the number 10 usually ends up in, and he'll drop deep and wide, or he'll just drop deep and central. And that changes the spacing of the midfield pretty significantly and causes dislocation between the lines, and also causes them to be in really bad shape anytime they turn the ball over. So it's a cascade effect of negative outcomes. And one of the biggest ones is that Carlos Gil is getting like 40% fewer touches of the ball in zone 14 than at any point in his MLS career. Even when he first came to MLS, he was playing as an inverted right midfielder. He was still getting more touches on the ball in the highest leverage spots than he is this year. So just, it all looks broken where, more than a quarter of the way into the season, it's still not impossible to bounce back from this, but this is a bigger hole than Sporting KC were in last year. And remember, around this time last season, Sporting KC started to get pieces healthy and add starting caliber, high-level players to their squad. The Revs already have most of their guys there. Yeah, Dylan Barrero is going to come back, but like, unless Dylan Barrero is as good as Lionel Messi now, he ain't fixing this.
And look, he's coming back from a year off. So temper your expectations of a guy. Let him have an opportunity just to reintegrate into playing games to start off. I mean, losing the outside backs doesn't help. Again, bad goalkeeping doesn't help. The excuses are there. At this point, Caleb has wrestled with how he wants to play, and you alluded to it. I think you got to throw some of that just straight out the window, and it has to be, how do we get the most of Gil, who still is the only one, despite not getting these touches you're talking about, who creates opportunities or finishes them, the only player on the entire team in a positive goal minus XG, like overperforming what the models say. Everybody else is underperforming on the team. There's not a single other person. So get more out of him. It's put up or shut up time for whether or not you're going to stick with Giacomo Vrioni, probably. Tomas Csonkai doesn't really seem like he's at his best on the wing. Maybe he should just be the number 9.
But
he
was last year.
I know, but I don't know. Vrioni's not scoring. Csonkai can score. He wants to shoot. That's his number one goal. Put him somewhere where he can do more of that. Maybe that's where Barrero fits in. But ultimately, I mean, we're arguing about ways to get them out of the bottom of the standing. So we can move on to other things. Austin, I know you're frustrated. We don't talk about you enough. We doubted the Verde and Black. We thought, you're going to be at the bottom of the West, no doubt about it. 4 wins in the last 5, beaten LA Galaxy at home, 2-0. It's time to talk about Austin. You're not even playing games. You're above that. 7 points off the West lead. How legit is this, Doyle, and how did they do that?
You said we doubted the Verde and Black as if it's a past tense thing. Are you done doubting the Verde and Black?
No, I just giving them their moment. We had a bunch of tweets that said give us 45 seconds. I'm not a true believer here. Like, no, okay. But I'm excited for them winning 4 out of 5 games and alleviating the pressure that, you know, like NYCFC was on Wolf's back and Cushing's had the same reward, which we'll get to in a bit.
This was the best all around game I've seen from them in a while. The first goal came out of their, you know, kind of a midfield ambush. They don't really press a lot, but they, you know, Josh Wolf has them setting up these kind of traps in midfield, and this one came out of that, and that was a good job. And the second one was just, look, the one silver lining, the one bright spot in last year's team was that both Danny Pereira and Owen Wolf are good young players, and it was fun to watch them sometimes together in central midfield, but neither's a ball winner. And so, even with their talent, they added up to less than the sum of their parts. Getting Alex Ring, who's a midfield ball winner, back in there with Danny Pereira just gives them, you know, more resilience up the spine and more ability to turn defense into attack. And that was the second goal. And from there, it was just the same story that it has been during most of this streak, which is they have one of the best goalkeepers in the league in Brad Stuver, and they have veteran center backs who don't shoot themselves in the foot and don't routinely lose physical duels in the box. And that's something that they struggled with last year. And so by not making simple mistakes, by having a little bit of stiffness up the spine, and being opportunistic in attack, they got, I thought, a well-earned victory over the Galaxy, and they look good in a lot of ways. And the fit between Driussi and Diego Rubio is
a good one.
It works in the ways that we thought it would work when they made that signing. So, there's a lot to be happy about, and I think that Austin will probably be fighting for a playoff spot for the rest of the season.
Next two games, big test at Vancouver, at Dallas, and then Houston. So it's at Vancouver, but then it's a bunch of Copa Tejas.
Yeah. Now, it's not like Houston or Dallas have been running away with Copa Tejas this year. So there, you know, there's stuff for that. I mean, we saw it against Houston. Ben, don't break.
It's Austin's to win. They've got 2 wins in 2 games so far. Yeah. Can I flip it, though? Because, hey, Flowers to Austin, it's wonderful. I do agree on Driussi and Rubio. I think Rubio's movement and willingness to sort of open up space in behind for Driussi to run into or arrive into is really useful. And plus, he's just, like, horrible to play against. And Austin needed a little bit of that in their team. This, to me, was a little bit of another blip for the Galaxy of, like, their bona fides. Mm-hmm. Because we knew set pieces were an issue. And last year, having the ball was not the issue. It was what happened when you lost the ball and whether you were in positions to defend and not have your aging center backs. I say that with the utmost respect as an aging person myself, not be isolated in space. But like this was the, oh, this is still an issue game.
Mm-hmm.
Losing the ball in bad spots, not being organized enough behind it. And then like, look, with Caceres and why can't
Yoshida.
Yoshida running backwards. Bad news. Bad news.
Yep. And this is, look, the Galaxy are good and fun, and they're going to win more games than they lose this year. And I think they'll probably finish top 4 in the Western Conference. And I don't doubt that comes the summer window, they'll add another piece or two that helps them. And Jalen Neal will help them in a lot of ways. But this is still a team that their rest defense is not great. Not as disastrous as it was, but when they push up field and take risks with the ball, they can be exposed. And some of it is just not having a ton of speed in the center backs, and some of it is just their shape. And then it's the set pieces thing. And they didn't get punished this week, but they have every other week of the season. So it's, you know, I feel about the Galaxy the same way I feel about Atlanta United. I like watching them because they have a lot of talent and also a lot of flaws. And that makes basically every game they play really entertaining.
Two teams that want to minimize flaws, mistakes, but exploit yours. Red Bulls of Vancouver, big game at Red Bull Arena. We went through the whole Brian White story. We don't need to hit that more. Here's a question Anders posed. Did Vancouver prove anything to you guys in this game? And I would say yes, absolutely. It was a game the Whitecaps should have won. You know, they get the goal from Brian White, and then they take the space away from the Red Bulls, don't give them opportunities to press or get those second ball wins that make them really dangerous in the final third. And then they just blow it on a set piece. Like, it was a great finish from Lewis Morgan at the back post, but I don't know how the ball gets through the first post for Vancouver. So for a team that values set pieces more than most, I would say, Vanni Sartini is adamant that, look, if 35% of goals are scored on set pieces, I'm going to spend 35% of my time in training on that. It had to kill him to see that ball go through, because if it hadn't, and Vancouver hold on, and remember, the Red Bulls get a red card. They were holding on at the end. Then that's four wins in four games on the road from Vancouver so far. After years, like an entire history in MLS where they were inept on the road. Could not win away from BC Place. So to me, this game proved a ton, which is that this team still understands what it takes to get results on the road. They have game changers. And I still believe that, man, in the summer, if they could add one more piece, probably a winger who can be goal dangerous and like be a real threat on the weak side to score goals, this is going to be a very good team in the Western Conference.
Yeah, I think they're already going to be a very good team in the Western Conference, but I wrote it in my column this weekend, and we've talked about it on the show before. They've had eight cracks at the best in North America over the past 2 years, and they have won none of those eight games. And in every single one of those instances, the talent gap between the Caps and those teams, whether it be Tigres or LAFC or Club León, it's been too much to overcome. They need that one more piece.
Imagine a Christian Espinoza, Doyle.
Yeah. Oh,
player imagine like that you're overloading perfect. To Ryan Gauld's side, and you are finding Espinoza consistently over the course of a game in space or with opportunities to finish.
Absolutely.
Like, it changes completely who this team is. And they went to New York and got this without three of their best players. Schaaf's not on the field. He got scratched early before. Kubas is what? He's suspended for yellow cards. And then Fafa, who's been very effective, but again, this is sort of the position I think they can have even another upgrade so they have more depth and quality, is unavailable as well. Like, those have been critical pieces, and they still should have won the game.
Yeah. That is a credit to the way the roster's been built. That's a credit to Vanni Sartini. That's a credit to the players. I would not be surprised if they won the Western Conference during the regular season. I wouldn't be, I will be a little surprised if they don't win Canadian Championship again. I think they're just better than Montreal and Toronto. But they are at best, without that extra piece, right? Without that, and they have an open DP slot, in part because they did so well with Brian White, that they have a DP caliber center forward who doesn't occupy a DP slot. That until they go out and get that guy, they are a dark horse at best to win the Shield or MLS Cup.
Hey, but we're talking about the Vancouver Whitecaps, like, already in dark horse Shield Cup status. One more piece. Take the next step. Let's go. Give me a quick Red Bulls take.
I still think this is a really good team. You mentioned in the pre-show meeting that the red cards to the young center backs are starting to add up. I think that's a little bit of a concern. And I think that it's likely, because they're young center backs, it's likely to improve over the course of the season. But also, like Vancouver, they're a piece short. And like Vancouver, they have an open DP slot. Like Vancouver, if they don't fill that DP slot with a high-level attacker this summer, then they are dark horses at best to win any kind of trophy this year.
I think it's not enough in terms of chance creation volume.
Yeah.
And once Vancouver got the game state tilted in their favor with the White goal, they took away space. And this is still a team, I think, despite the fact that they, are not the crazy pressing teams of Red Bull's past, that wants to play direct, wants to play centrally, and wants to get opportunities off second balls and off wins in the midfield. So yeah, we'll see. Definitely improved, but still some issues they're working out. Philadelphia does not lose at home, and RSL did them in 2-1. Now, look, the XG was all Union. I think Philadelphia should have won. Certainly, Ali Bedoya after the game was like, yo, we screwed up. We've got to look at ourselves. We should have won that game. But Chicho Arango, no-look assist. Alex Catrani's absurd half volley. And sometimes that's all it takes. Just a couple moments. Who gets them? They win the game. Who are you most sort of marking down real-time thoughts to? Philadelphia or Salt Lake based on this result?
More Philadelphia, just because they did play well. I enjoy the fact that Quinn Sullivan has won a starting job over Michael Ura as one of the two forwards. Ura still plays a role off the bench, but it does look like it's Sullivan's job. I think they're doing a little bit more with the ball than they had been at times, but they don't. It's almost like a Nashville light type of issue. Philadelphia 2 years ago dominated teams in their own box. Andre Blake was the best or second best goalkeeper in the league that year and had been for many years before that. The center backs were incredible, and they're all 15% worse than they were. And so they're allowing soft goals, and they're not pitching shutouts in games where you'd expect them to pitch shutouts, and they're not turning their dominance into points as regularly. I still think they're a good team, and I think that they can improve over the course of the year. I would expect this team to be better in October than they are right now in April. But it's starting to be a little concerning. It really is. And maybe I'm just over-indexing the Pachuca thing because they were so bad in that series that I'm shook, but it feels like there have been more iffy moments in those tight situations that Philly, this group, has historically dominated.
We shall see. Much more season to go, but that's the first loss for Philly in MLS play so far. Minnesota 2, Kansas City 1. Peter Vermes did not like the onside decision on Tony Oloshea's second goal in this match. He even brought his iPad to the post-game press conference. I don't think we've got to go super deep into that part, Doyle, other than that was definitely a memeable moment from Peter, and he's got a habit of creating those. But ultimately, we all know that that's an incredibly difficult angle to judge on, given the parallax effect. If you don't know what that is, it's basically things in the distance are going to appear differently than things in the foreground, depending on the line that you're looking on. Our guy, Soccer Photonometry, says that's 1 inch onside. I'm not saying that that is God's honest truth from him, but I'm going to trust math more than anything else. And ultimately what that's going to tell me is it's not clear and obvious that this is offside. That the only person who knows is the person looking down the line, and that's the AR, and they appear to have made a great call. But hey, offside and the laws, I get it. They can get us a little bit discombobulated at times. Let's do the Reynoso thing, man. It's over, huh? Is that?
Yeah, a little heartbroken.
Is that it? Like, he didn't get on his flight, according to Tom Bogert. Just feels like it's over.
Yeah, like the third or fourth time that he has not gotten onto a flight that they had arranged for him, and they're doing everything they can to try to accommodate this guy over the years. And it sucks because I've said it a million times. He's one of my favorite players in the league to watch. Just has those moments of genius that are why we love this game. But he's just, whatever is happening with him off the field, it is too onerous and too much of a distraction for this team to keep him around. And with the way they're playing and collecting points, they don't need him. So I suspect that we've seen the last of Emmanuel Reynoso in Minnesota and probably the last of him in MLS, which is a damn shame because he's such a talent.
Okay. Hopefully that works out for all parties involved. I heard you compare Tony Oloshea to Brian White in the intro to this show. Is Tony on that path? How good can this guy be? I mean, it's pretty incredible. Minnesota found him out of St. John's in the Super Draft in 2022. He was a 17th overall selection. He didn't get a ton of time with the first team, a little bit of time with Minnesota 2 on loan, and then killed it at San Antonio, and here he is. Like, is he going to be on like that exponential pathway here, or is this a flash?
So right now, the early data is really good because it's not like he's, you know, he scored that goal against Columbus in week one. That was a banger. That was a low percentage shot, and it's hard to make that replicable unless you're, Messi or our good friend Ignacio Piatti, who has joined the MLS season pass crew. Guys don't overperform their expected goals on those more than a couple times a year. But what we've seen since then is his ability to find space in the open field and then to his ability to find space on scrums in the, and this was like a Chris Wondolowski goal where like everybody forgets about him at the back post and he gets himself a tap in. So through about 350 minutes, he's at, I think, 2.9 expected goals. In terms of his expected goals per 90, he's top five in the league, like same level as Benteke, ahead of Dennis Bouanga. American Soccer Analysis, they have their all-in-one goals added metric, which is, you know, you some parts of it I love, some parts of it I'm not.
But conceptually, though, it's all the things you do added up, how likely is that to lead to a goal?
Right. And they have him as the third best attacker in the league per 90. And it is all about the receiving metric, which is a measure of like how valuable.
I was going to say his runs are all it's what I've been most impressed by.
Yeah. How valuable are the spots where you're receiving the ball? And he is, as for their reckoning, he's the best in the league, just ahead of Benteke, and they're miles ahead of the third guy on the list, who is Brian White. So whether he has played as a center forward or as a second forward or as a winger, and he's played all three of those spots so far this year, he has added value by getting on the ball in high leverage spots and then finishing those chances. And we saw him do that in MLS Next Pro. And then we saw him do that last year in the USL Championship with San Antonio. He has brought it with him into regular minutes in Minnesota, and I don't think it's going away. You know, based on everything we've seen from, like, he knows where goals happen, and he gets himself into those spots, and then goals happen. That's pretty good formula.
Yes, it is, and it made me think of poor Moncef Pekrar, who just continues to have issues with not the first, but the second. He gets in great positions. The goals don't come. And then this weekend, when he does score, he's offside, Doyle, but New York City FC still win 2-1 at home to Charlotte. This homestand has been wonderful. Three straight wins, unbeaten in five. The pressure that was on Nick Cushing is evaporating, and that's what happens when you get results. They'll get Colorado to close the homestand. New York City right now, what changed? Is it just being at home, or is there something other going on here?
I mean, a lot of it is that they're at home, right? And that, like, that we know that that has always been a pretty big split for NYCFC, though it should be said they're playing half these games at Yankee Stadium and the other half at Citi Field. So it's not like a real, they have a castle and they defend it. It's this still this weird situation, and it will be until 2027. But the other part of it is that James Sands and Keaton Parks are both healthy and not getting suspended. And when those two guys are in midfield together, the rest of the team is able to function at a higher level. And for this team, functioning at a higher level has come a little bit more in transition on the break than in, I should say a lot more in transition on the break than past versions of NYCFC. And that probably comes down to the difference between Maxi Morales and Santi Rodriguez as your number 10. Santi Rodriguez is an attacker who likes to, you know, drive into space either with or without the ball. And his best moments that produce end product come out of that. Whereas Maxi Morales was like the consummate midfield orchestrator. And he was one of the best we've ever had in this league at creating space, not just for himself, but his teammates in the attacking third via possession. So with Maxi, you know, first leaving and then coming back and getting hurt, with him out of the picture, I think the complexion of how NYCFC run the game has changed. And they're doing a nice job of it. I said they needed to get 10 points out of this five-game road trip. They're already on 10, and now they have Colorado coming in next week. And Colorado have been playing better, but this is still a game that NYCFC should win. And if they take, what would that be, 13 points from 15 at home, that's job well done, and that puts them in a good spot going forward for the rest of the year.
All right, speaking of Colorado, they're part of our segment where we just give you one big take on each game. Let's run it through. Cincinnati 2, Colorado 1. What's your take?
Lucho balled again with a front line of Yuya Kubo and Corey Baird, and Aaron Bupenza didn't get into the game until second half stoppage time. So I think you could be bullish in a lot of ways about that if you're Cincinnati. But there's also cause to be bearish where it looks like the manager has moved on from the star DP center forward who was signed last summer.
It's pretty clear though that Lucho's alpha has outshined any other challengers, and it's like, yo, it's my team. Like, the proof is in the pudding.
Yeah.
I make the plays.
I'm not sure. Like, honestly, I'm not sure it's Lucho's fault that Bupenza hasn't produced. This is, you know,
oh, I agree. I completely
I don't think it's a battle of alphas. Like, if you're a real alpha in Bupenza's case, then you recognize, you do what Wayne Rooney did, and you recognize Lucho's talent, and you say, all right, how can I make this work better with the two of us? And Bupenza has just not been able to do that this year at all.
I'm talking more in terms of, like, if you have to, as a manager, say, this is the guy whose influence we need at its very best, no matter what else it means personnel-wise, even if it means benching a DP, then that's the decision that we have to make. Because Baird and Yuya, look, Baird got his first goal, right? He had a nice little chip, beautiful play. But, like, those guys are selfless. They're movement guys. They want to create space for others. You can bounce it off of them. Like, give the ball back to Lucho and it works. Now, Rapids weren't great, hung in there. I do have to shout out Moise Mombito, who got a goal, his second of the season, one of the best young defenders in this league. He's looking like he should have played more last year is what he's looking like. But this team is still missing another player. Speaking of teams that need somebody else, and I think it's basically the same need as I would give for the Whitecaps, which is a winger to provide some balance and some goal-scoring threat. Because Kevin Cabral, for all his qualities that we've discussed ad nauseum, the goal-scoring threat's not there. Rafa Navarro is not a goal-scoring threat on his own and hasn't ever got great service. We don't know otherwise, but certainly I don't think his DP quality when it comes to the cap. Like, they've got to add another big piece and see where it all can go. But hey, good start, tough result, keep it moving. Good result for Montreal and Columbus, 0-0. Columbus preparing for the Champions Cup, which we'll talk about in a second. They rotated, but Montreal did what they've done on the road most of the year, which is sit super deep, make defending predictable, provide no space in the final third, and then try to hit on the counter 3 to 5 times a game. They had chances. They couldn't score them. But, yeah, Wilfred Nancy and Laurent Courtois got to enjoy a nice discussion on the field, and nobody had to go home feeling particularly sad. So there you have it. How about another 0-0, Chicago-Atlanta? Doyle, should we talk about this, or should we just let our guy Kalen Carr take it away? Let's give Kalen the floor.
And I would like to take this opportunity instead to plea to the Chicago Fire squad right now. This coming weekend, Zach Thornton, my ex-teammate, their goalkeeper coach, is going into the Ring of Fire. It is, you know, the Hall of Fame for the Fire. And I look at the way this back line gives up goals and puts their goalkeeper under it, and I shiver at the idea that Zach Thornton would be in that goal and that I would make a decision like that. Even in training, I could not live with that. I'd be terrified. So just this weekend, please, I beg you, Chicago Fire, do not put on the night where Zach Thornton goes into the Ring of Fire, come up with a performance. Don't be your worst enemy. At least start there.
Well, some of that happened. Chris Brady then also happened and did his best to honor Zach Thornton on this night. That's really the takeaway, Doyle, right? Is Chris Brady is a really good young goalkeeper, and it just seems like his improvement path continues to rise. Like, some of the early issues, decision-making-wise and little blips, we're not seeing those anymore.
Yeah, that was from last week on This Is MLS with Kalen making that plea to the Fire. And yeah, Chris Brady heard it. He was awesome. He was as you said, even last year, he was an excellent shot stopper. Like, his shot stopping numbers were better than Gaga Slonina's before Gaga got the move to Chelsea. It's the other stuff, controlling the box, being a little cleaner with your feet, probably communication with the back line, where there needs to be more improvement. And I think we saw some of that in this game. But what really stands out every time you watch Brady is just he's a monster at keeping the ball out of his own net. Oftentimes, in spite of what the guys in front of him are doing.
How about Atlanta? No wins in 4 games. Level of concern for Gonzalo Pineda?
I think it's starting to percolate a little bit. They've had some injuries, but I don't think it's been enough for it to be this sort
of...
They're
in ninth. by the way. They're in ninth place, 12 points from nine matches.
Part of it, though, is Thiago Almada hasn't been the same Thiago Almada this year. This was a guy who was pretty clearly the second best player in MLS last year. Some would argue who was the best player in MLS last year. World Cup winner. Everyone expects him to be a $25, $30 million outbound transfer. He hasn't been that level of player. And I don't know if this is something that Gonzalo Pineda is doing or if this is something that Almada is pushing too much, thinking about this summer at the Olympics, because I think he's going to be maybe the centerpiece of that Argentina team at the Olympics, which has a good chance of winning a gold medal. I don't know if he's thinking about Benfica or Ajax or Feyenoord. Those are some of the teams that he's been linked to. So it feels a little bit off. And it's look, Gonzalo Pineda is the guy on the sideline. It's his job to fix it.
Dallas 2, Houston 0, big time win in the Copa Tejas. For Dallas, they needed the win. They hadn't won since opening day against San Jose. Houston going to just be ruining both the unlucky play and a bad decision from Griffin Dorsey to take a red card in like the fourth minute. Something like that, right?
Yep.
Yeah, you're just going to be behind it the entire game. Your game plan goes out the window. So a bummer for the Dynamo, but Dallas get all 3 points. LAFC 3, Portland 2. This feels like more of the same from the Portland Timbers, which is that they can score, but they can't really stop you from scoring. But I just have to say this before we get to Diego Chara. It is a joy to watch Denny Bawanga hit a ball. Like every which way with any part of the foot at any angle, he can absolutely mash the soccer ball. It is so fun to watch him shoot.
Weeby, 15 and a half goals for Bawanga this season.
Over.
Over. Okay.
Over.
Easy.
Over. Over. Over.
20 and a half.
Under.
Okay. You think he's going to end up somewhere
He's going to hit a heater. Goals. He's going to hit a heater, and he's going to put up like 7 goals in 3 games. And when Olivier Giroud gets there, the huge weakness that they have, and oh, by the way, they have a DP spot in addition to that to fill if they would like. The weakness that they have is alleviated, and Bawanga is already on the end of an absurd amount of really good chances, and he just creates those chances for himself too, because he can hit the ball from anywhere with incredible pace on frame. He's hit the post or the crossbar 6 times this year. He's been super unlucky. I'll take over on 18 plus, and I hope I'm laughing at the end of this. Who has him in Golden Boot? That's what I really need to know. Maybe I need to base this on that. Anyway, let's talk Diego Chara. 377 games for one club. It's an MLS record. It's absolutely incredible. He passed Chris Wondolowski for that honor. Nick Raimondo, 3rd, just about 7 behind Wando, now 8 behind Diego. And then Diego got 2 yellow cards and a red card in this loss to LAFC. Our hero sent off. But where does he rank all time in D-mids, Doyle, in MLS history? Because he's got to be in the top 5.
Yeah, I think there's a group of 5 guys. Chris Armas, Kyle Beckerman, Ozzie Alonso, Dax McCarty, and Diego Chara. And he's in that group. And I think, all of these guys had different strengths. What Chara's strength was, and honestly still is at 38, and it's kind of remarkable, is his field coverage. He puts out fires all over the field, and in his prime, he's pretty clearly the best that we've ever had at that. Now, he was not as great at moving the ball as a guy like Ozzie or Beckerman or, well, the other 4 in that list, right? I think he's probably the 5th of 5 in terms of his ability with the ball. And we kind of saw that with the red card this week. It got caught up under his feet. But his strengths still are like utterly remarkable. He is, when Portland does their Hall of Fame or Ring of Honor or whatever they do there, their Tree of Life, I don't know. like he should go into that unanimously whenever it is that he ends up hanging up his boots, which, by the way, doesn't look anytime soon, right? He's clearly maybe lost a half step from 5-6 years ago, but only a half step. He's still very obviously one of the 15 best D-mids in the league, and that's a difficult type of guy to replace. So, he could play till he's 40. beyond.
I would not doubt it with Diego Chara. Congratulations to him. Congratulations to Portland Timbers, the club, the fans, the entire city for signing a guy like that and holding on to him for as long as you have. That is a true joy for both the player and the city and the community. I am absolutely sure of that. All right, on to That's Whack. We'll go the opposite direction. DC finally got a win. They've been searching for one. We'll save that conversation for another day, but Seattle lose yet again. Doyle, it's whack. We said it was whack last week, and then I went on wrap up, and they asked, what coach is under pressure for you? And I said Brian Schmetzer. And I'm not necessarily saying that in terms of his job. I'm saying it more in terms of a championship caliber roster, team, culture. We thought coming into the season now has one win at home against a Montreal team that was playing their sixth straight game away all the way across the country and were completely knackered. That's their one win. And they just continue to shoot themselves in the foot. All these givens for the Sounders over the years, which was like this group of veterans, you know, the like Rodon, Morris, you know,
Steph Fry,
Nuhu, whatever, were always at a certain level of capability, but also competitiveness. And I just don't think that level is there. And then the top level on the DP side hasn't been there because you've had injuries. Rusnak's out. Jalpalo's out. Rui Diaz is not the same Rui Diaz that he once was. Lodero's not there anymore, which might be a bigger loss just from a culture standpoint than I think anybody predicted. Like, he was just a dog. So the pressure's on, because when you have those expectations and you're at a club like the Sounders, you got to win.
Yeah. The thing I'll point out, the difference between the Sounders and the other teams in this sort of neighborhood in terms of points and points per game.
In the doldrums.
Is that the Sounders are actually creating chances and the Sounders are actually limiting chances going in the other direction, right? I don't think they're as bad as their record.
I agree.
Now, they're not anywhere near as good as what we thought they could be entering the season. Pedro de la Vega spending the first 2 months of the year injured has played a big role in that. But this team shouldn't be this bad, and I don't think they will continue to be this bad. That said, they have a decision to make this summer on Raul Rui Diaz. He is in the last year of his contract, and he is a legend. He's one of the great playoff performers in MLS history. He's not the guy he was. He's just not. And if they're serious about sort of bouncing back down the stretch and making the playoffs and making a run at it, they'll probably need to come to an agreement with him and then hope that whatever forward they find in the international transfer market has a Lodero 2016 type effect on this team, because they might be in the same situation come midseason.
Oh, man. Well, you know, Schmetzer was asked about his job security after the game, which, you know, never a good sign, a sign of the times currently for this Seattle team. They've just got to find a way against a really tough schedule. It's at Philly, LA at home, at Portland, at RSL, Vancouver at home, at St. Louis, RSL at home, at Columbus. I mean, that's 5 of 8 away, 0 bad teams.
Yeah.
That's tough. That's
this, and this is where past iterations of this group of players always found the gear that they needed to start getting results. And Christian Roldan's still there. Jordan Morris is still there. Jao Paulo, you mentioned him. He's still there. Rusnak has been good over the past 3
Reagan,
years.
Reagan, now as he comes back. Yep.
So, you know, I don't think that they had excuses that were legitimate for the first 6 weeks of the season. I don't think that those are legitimate anymore. I think that, you know, the rubber has met the road and they have to start putting together the results have to start matching the performances, because I don't think the performances have been particularly bad.
Anders, quote, I'm calling it now. We will make the playoffs. I've decided that's guarantee in the reverse for the Seattle Sounders team. Schmetzer did say, look, last week he said before the game, I don't think a lot of this is tactics. I think it's maybe personnel. And afterwards, Schmetz said, we're going to have to try everything. Switching starters, guys that normally are sort of shoe-ins might not be there. We might have to change formations. That's the job now. is to pull him out of the nosedive, and it's on the players too. They had a closed door meeting last week as well. So we'll see what happens with the Sounders. How about Nashville? 1-1 draw at home to San Jose, in which I think San Jose were the better team-ish.
Yep, I would agree with that.
Yeah, that's tough. Do we want to go bad Nashville or want to go good San Jose, at least in terms of Hernan Lopez?
Let's go good San Jose.
Yeah, let's go good. What are we saying here? $6 million, record transfer from Godoy Cruz and River Plate, a number 10, 23 years old. He is the great-grandson?
Diego Maradona? He's the grandnephew.
Grandnephew. Okay.
Maradona's sister's grandson.
Okay. I'm tracking. Yeah. Look, say what you will for the Quakes. The season looked like it was just going, you know, it was spinning, going down. But they didn't lie down and die. They went and spent the record transfer here. And Chris Welch called him, quote, a dynamic central playmaker of his caliber who will be in the prime of his career, demonstrates we're willing to invest at a higher level than ever before. So he fits the long-term mold, and they think he'll make an immediate impact as well. Doyle, what do you think?
I mean, I'd love to see the Quakes doing this. You know, the fans have been dying for them to spend for a long time. And now over the past few years, they've made some investments. It's kind of ironic. The one semi-bright spot in this season has been the play of homegrown playmaker Nico Chikiris. And I think, you know, this guy will come in and take those minutes. Unless they go to a 4-3-3 and they have Munoz play sort of as a playmaking left winger and keep Chikiris as kind of a number eight ball mover. But we'll see. Like, all of that's on the table. The real issue with the Quakes is twofold. The defenders that they brought in this offseason have not been good. They just haven't. So they, you know, they concede chances to everybody. And then the goalkeeping has been, it's been the worst in the league, which is shocking because you and me and everybody who watched MLS
last year,
picked Daniel to be the goalkeeper of the year. And he was awful the first month. He got hurt. William Yarbrough has come in and he's looked a little bit past it over the past month. So it's just, if you're giving up, the Quakes have really thin margins anyway, and then you're giving up goals you shouldn't, you end up with a season from hell. And we're almost a third of the way into it. And it has been, you know, this result notwithstanding, it's been hellish for Quakes fans.
You've seen the goal minus expected goals of San Jose's opponents, yeah?
Yeah. Yep.
Plus 11.4. That's seven more, like, overperformance against the model, against the Quakes, than any other team in the league. And that's a combination of, obviously, goalkeeping, but also just some unlucky moments for them as well, or just like very, very good finishing. You wonder if that'll hold, but they need solutions on the chance creation side too. And Lopez should help out in that regard. Any desire to sort of like parade around and trumpet that you were right about Orlando City, who lost at home to Toronto? I think you were one of the only analysts who didn't have them picked at the top of the East. I mean, I really thought that's where they would be. And it's now time to continue to include them in the WAC segment.
I mean, I had them sixth and they're 13th. So I was.
You were half right. I wasn't right.
I was just less wrong than the rest of y'all. Speaking of goalkeepers, I didn't expect, like, I've never been a fan of Pedro Gallese. He makes routine saves look more difficult than they actually were. And if you watch him closely, he's got happy feet. He gets late pushes. I think he's been a below average goalkeeper for most of his MLS career. He has been three levels below that this year. And we saw on the first goal in this one, that made no sense the way he attempted to save that shot.
I think it was second goal, the game winner, right? From Prince Owusu.
I thought it was the Spicer goal where he came out and tried to kick save it with his feet instead of just getting his, but either way, he gave up another terrible goal this weekend. The offseason, not going out and getting a DP number 10.
They're still trying a lot of different things here. And Ojeda was in the lineup for this game.
He was, but he wasn't playing as a 10. I know. Oscar Parejas still refuses to play him there, even for a few minutes, which is bizarre. Facu Torres, we've seen him get run at the spot, and he's just not a chance creator in that way. Luis Muriel, you've pointed out that they gave him a 3-year guaranteed deal. Boy, is that looking ugly right now. The only guy who's sort of playing well is Duncan McGuire, who I have to assume he'll be gone in the summer, given what happened in the winter. Brakalo, the center back, to be fair, he came in with the knock, and then they've slowly integrated him to try to not, you know, make it worse. But then he just keeps picking up little knocks. So the center back situation is unsettled. It's been ugly. It's been ugly on every line. I do think they are playing better over the past month than they had the first month of the season. But, you know, that in 250 will get you a Starbucks or 13th place in the East.
Oh, boy. I'm just looking for Brian White's. Yeah, Brian White's on $511,000 this year. Do you think maybe Duncan McGuire would have taken a Brian White deal, or maybe that was too low? I don't know.
I think he wanted to go to Europe, and I understand that. Most players do want to test themselves in Europe. It's complete, like, whether it's playing in the championship with a team that has a chance to get promoted to the Premier League.
I thought you were going to say a team with a B in their name. I really thought you were going to hit me with that bit.
I'm glad he didn't end up at Blackburn. Oh,
absolutely.
That was a disaster waiting to happen. So hopefully, you know, I've said it on the show a few times. I want him to end up at Club Bruges. You know, like, in terms of teams that have shown interest, like, this is a Champions League team. And we know that in terms of player development, Belgium is one of, if not the very top league in the world right now. It's like, it checks every box. And Bruges has done business with MLS teams before.
Yeah, I mean, but Tejan didn't necessarily have his best run there, and now he's at Inter Milan. Where, like, he's not playing, but he's at Inter Milan. So, if that's the career path you want to go on, I would be happy with that career path. That's a decent
McGuire.
Career path. All right, anything missing from match day 11? Anything pop up in your mind here that we could have sussed out a little bit more? Are we good?
Do you think that Orlando's going to make the playoffs?
Yes. I'll say yes.
Yeah.
I don't think we're talking about, like, home.
No.
Any sort of home games, but I think if you look through, like, 5 through 9, they'll find a way to come through that muck and mire.
Do you think Miami's going to win the Shield?
Yes. I don't think there's another team that has a high enough consistent level.
So Columbus is that team, but because of their CONCACAF champions, I still think.
I mean,
Columbus,
look, they could recover, but we haven't said it. They've not won in 6 games in MLS. Yeah. They got 5 straight ties, and it's okay. It's
not surprising because they're juggling playing the best teams in the region, and nobody else in the league has made it thus far. We know that takes a toll, and it was the choice between competing for the Shield or competing for CONCACAF Champions Cup. I think they absolutely made the right choice. Okay. But I think the gap is starting to be a little bit too big between them and Miami to see the Crew close it and win the Shield. So I'm with you.
I would be, you know what, if I was going to pick a team right now, I think is most likely to challenge Inter Miami for the Shield. You get 3 choices. Let's see if you can get it.
Columbus? No.
Nope.
Cincinnati?
Nope.
All right, let me take a look at the standings real quick. Vancouver?
LAFC.
Yeah, that's a good call.
I think it's LAFC. I think they have all the pieces, and their game model, though people don't always love it, is super effective. They create a ton of chances. They should be finishing more, both Bawanga, and you know what? If Oliveira hits it, off we go, and Olivier Giroud is going to be a monster.
But Olivier Giroud, they're only going to have him for the final 10 games of the regular season.
I'm saying most likely among those teams. I think this team could absolutely go on a run where nobody's beating them. Anyway, let's talk about a new segment on this show. Producer Maria has often schooled us about Liga MX, Mexican soccer, and many other things. But she hits us up for the first time, says, it's been a long time coming. Guys, I'm a Liga MX fan and now an MLS sicko. I'm writing to you due to the last Monday show where the great, all caps, American analyst Matt Doyle dared to compare Tigres and Monterrey as the same caliber rivals for Columbus and CONCA champions. I thought Matt loved numbers, stats, and much more. Therefore, I want to bring up some delightful numbers to illustrate how, yes, they are both Regios, the same city, and a great wallet to back up building a powerful team. But aside from that, the difference between these two on the field this season is significant. For example, at the time the Crew faced Tigres, Tigres was in seventh place with a Pachuca game, and Monterrey in the same span of CONCACAF Cup games, while Monterrey was second with just a goal differential that's just off being the first all-time, or the first in Liga MX, and already had classified to the Liguilla. This season, Tigres has not been able to beat any of the top four teams in Liga MX, not Cruz Azul, not Toluca, not America, and not Pachuca, nor Monterrey. The key thing here is that Tigres had a great tenure. Monterrey has been able to be a great team in the last three seasons, but have not been further than the semifinals. This is their opportunity to go get that trophy. So she says if Columbus beats Monterrey, it is, quote, the biggest win for an MLS team versus a Liga MX team in the history of the competition. And she says that coming from this as a Pumas fan that knows their weaknesses. Sorry, Anders, but Seattle beat not so strong Liga MX teams on that run to the championship. What do you think?
I think she's wrong. So right now the standings in the
you were just waiting for that moment.
Yeah, right now what it finished with Monterrey in fourth and Tigres in fifth. There was 1 point separating these two teams. There's a goal differential for Monterrey was plus 13, Tigres was plus 11, so two back. As Maria even points out, Monterrey haven't won a trophy in 3 years, so it's not like this team is coming in as a juggernaut that is just steamrolling teams left and right.
Now, Maria says this was at the time of the games, when the games happened.
Okay. I don't care. Like, these two teams have shown that they are roughly of the same caliber this season. And in terms of what they've accomplished over that past half decade, Tigres is a much more successful team than Monterrey. And then whether or not it's the biggest win for an MLS team in CONCACAF Champions League history, I still think what Toronto did in 2018 when they beat like prime Tigres, that was shocking. That was absolutely shocking. Maria's in the chat saying Monterrey needs this. So Monterrey, yeah. Monterrey a little bit more desperate maybe than Tigres were. But I don't think the gap between these two victories, should the Crew pull it off, is as large as she made it seem in that email. And I would point out to Maria that there are three types of lies: lies, damned lies, and statistics.
Yes. Maria is going to have a rebuttal for us, I'm sure of it, coming, plus more knowledge on Liga MX as we prepare for League's Cup. Are Crew going to do it, you think? They're going to go to Monterrey and
I do. I think they're going to go and get it done.
I hope you're right. That goes down
What's
Wednesday night.
What's the free
night.
Space, Weeby? What's
yeah,
the free
it's disappointment.
Space?
It's disappointment. I'm used to it. I can deal with disappointment. That's not an issue for me. We hope you weren't disappointed in the recap from Match Day 11. Let us know who you want to hear from on Thursdays. We will see you then. Have a great week, everybody. Adios.